Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, December 30th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from CHP Berkshires, reminding listeners that it's open enrollment season for Massachusetts Health Connect insurance plans. CHP patient navigators are helping Berkshire area residents to get and keep their ACA insurance plans. CHPBerkshires.org. Joining us today is Dr. Imaloe Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care. Dr. Gray is a board-certified family medicine physician practicing primary care in Ballston Spa. She's here to answer your general health, wellness, and preventative care questions. She's also here to teach us how to hack our next doctor visit. Don't know what it means. We're going to find out. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and joining us today is Dr. Imaloe Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care. Dr. Gray is a board-certified family medicine physician practicing in Ballston Spa. Dr. Gray received her medical degree from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. She completed a residency at Ellis Family Medicine and was previously an attending family physician with Nathan Letower Hospital at Nursing Home in Gloversville. If you have a question, general family medicine question, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. VoxPop@WAMC.org is the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. Doctor, I'm going to say your full name because I practiced it before you came in. Dr. Imaloe Gray, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Can I just call you something simpler?
Dr. Gray, Ima.
Dr. Gray, Ima. Okay, Ima's. That's a beautiful name.
Thank you very much.
Well, how did you get from the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland to here, upstate New York?
To upstate New York. So I'll start with how I got to Ireland.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, I'll keep that kind of brief. My family is Nigerian. My mom's family during the Nigerian Civil War, way back in the 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
My grandfather was able to help a group of Irish missionaries get out of the country back to Ireland just through connections that he had. And so when the Civil War was over, his family was contacted and said, hey, you know, we have schools by the missionaries. We have schools over here. Do you want to send your kids over? So some of my mom's family was already in England. Some decided, sure, we'll go over to Ireland. So they did. And the only other doctors in my family went to school in the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. So that's how I ended up there.
Did you like it?
I loved it. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Do you like it here?
I do, yeah. So those same doctors who went to the Royal College, they practice up here. I have an uncle who's an OBGYN here. He's in Clifton Park. And I have an aunt who's in family practice in Troy. So.
Well, it's great to have you here. And I got to say, I'm a little mystified and somewhat curious about this whole hacking doctor's visits bit. But before I get to that, and I just found out about this in the green room, that you've won an Emmy. What's all that about?
In a past life, after med school in Ireland and training in the Mediterranean in Malta, I moved to New York City and I was a medical producer for the Dr. Oz show for a year from 2015 to 2016.
Now, I hate to sound like a complete boob, but I never have seen Dr. Oz's show. So what kind of doctor is he?
I don't think he's practicing anymore. He was a cardiothoracic surgeon by practice. He was introduced to America's TVs by Oprah and then went on to start his own show, the Dr. Oz Show. And on his show, he covered a very wide range of topics. I don't think cardiothoracics ever really came up, but a wide range of topics that were, you know, interesting, trending. Generally, it was to promote health and wellness.
Right.
And so that was what the medical team helped him with.
As a producer, what'd you do?
A lot of very interesting things. I think the most interesting probably or the most interesting to hear about was whenever you saw a heart or a set of lungs or anything on the show, they were actual real heart and lungs. So it was part of our job as medical producers to head all the way uptown to the anatomy department at Columbia Hospital, go down to the anatomy department, go through the buckets.
Wheel them into the studio?
Mm-hmm.
You'd have actual heart and lungs in the studio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Must have been a hell of a show. Is it still on?
It is no longer, they're no longer running.
We're joined, and you know what? That's a secondary topic, but I could talk about it all day. Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care joins us today. 800-348-2551 is our number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Okay. What do you mean by hacking a doctor's visit? You go to the doctor, you turn your head and cough, whatever happens, happens. What do you mean?
So in primary care, I feel like a lot of people, we're the ones that, we're the first port of call. You know, yeah. We're the first people, something hurts, you broke something, something doesn't feel right. We're the ones that you come to first. We might have an agenda of our own of this is what we think is supposed to go on. The patients obviously come in with their own agenda of this is what I want to go on. And a lot of times I feel like there's a disconnect between what the patient wants, what we want, and getting that done. How to hack it, I just mean how to not leave your doctor's office frustrated, how to get what you wanted going into it, and how to leave having gotten exactly what you were hoping for and looking for.
Well, give me an example of this. I mean, before you start,
yeah.
You know, in my worldview, I'm an old fellow, and, the doctor's usually right, and if I have some cockamamie idea, and the doctor says, well, you're an idiot, I go with the flow, and the doctor's correct. Is it a democracy?
It is. It should be. So joint decision making is a big thing. So I'll address that where you say, well, I think the doctor's right. We have a lot of training. So I might be an expert in bodies. You're an expert in your body. And so we need to meet in the middle there to figure out how to make things work for you. So what I might recommend for one person who says, my foot hurts, might not work for you when you tell me your foot hurts. If you come in and tell me, this such and such is my issue, I might have like four different things that I'm running through of this is going to be our solution. But none of those might work for you. So if I say to you, this is the best study, the best data, this is gold standard, this is what we're going to do, and you just nod and smile at me and you leave knowing you're not going to do it, then you've left without getting the solution you wanted. In 4 weeks when you're still having that problem, I'm dissatisfied too because I haven't fixed it for you.
Do people do that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Very often.
They don't follow doctor's orders.
Oh, my gosh, no.
Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like that would be one thing. So that would be one of the tips. If your doctor suggests something and you're just not going to do it, that's okay. We don't take it personally. Tell us that you're not going to do it so we can pivot and find a different plan.
Okay. Again, this gets back to me being an old man, but the doctor knows more than I know, okay? Unless I have an MD, at some point you have to be adamant about your suggestions, right?
True. And a psychologist told me during residency that I was pathologically charming, and that's how I get most of my patients to do what I'm asking them to do.
Well, you're the first guest to be that way. So thank you. No, I'm kidding. Thank you very much. All right. So what else you got?
So one of the things, I think this is a big one, make lists. Before you come in for your visit, make lists. I want lists of the problems that you want to discuss. If you can write them down, even better. So make a list of this is bothering me, this is bothering me, this is bothering me. Make a list of the symptoms.
This is for general checkup?
I'll get to the general checkup part in just a second. But if you're
you
coming
are well
in
prepared.
For, yeah, if you're coming in for a problem visit, if you are saying my tummy hurts, I want the when does your tummy hurt? How did it start? When did it start? What were you doing? If you say like roughly beginning of November, if you can tell me November 1st, that helps, as opposed to roughly the beginning. If you're saying to me, I've tried all the over-the-counter stuff, I actually want you to tell me what all the over-the-counter stuff have you tried. If you're saying, I took everything, tell me, was it Tylenol or was it ibuprofen? How much Tylenol did you take? Why did you stop taking it? Did it help or did it not? With the list of symptoms, for example, or the list of the actual problems, I want you to have the list written down of exactly what it is that you want to discuss, but have it in, say, priority. The biggest thing that's bothering you, put that right up top, up first. Because your time with us is limited. Our time with you is limited.
And what is the amount of time that you usually have with a patient?
It really does depend. So different offices might practice things differently. For the most part, you have, for a problem visit, between about 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay. It's not a lot of time.
It's not a lot of time. It's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
So 15 or 20 minutes. And that's precious. That's time for you to get in, talk to the medical assistant or the nurse that's going to room you, come into us, tell us in detail about your problem. We figure out what's going on and then figure out a plan. 15 minutes is really, really short. So if you come in organized with a list, that helps tremendously.
How many patients actually come in with a list?
Very, very few, unfortunately.
Does the person who sets up the appointment for you, suggest this to the patient?
I don't believe so, but that's actually a really good suggestion. And that's something that, you know, each office we can kind of tailor. So we can say, hey, if a patient calls in with such and such problem and they're making a visit, please tell them to bring in, you know, this and this list.
Yeah.
You asked about preventative visits earlier. Yeah. So your preventative visit, it is first and foremost a preventative visit. It's not the, I kept all my problems all year, and I'm now going to tell you all of my problems while you're also trying to get me my preventative care at the same time.
Right.
You know, we will try, of course, as much as possible to address, if there's something that's going to fall off before you leave the room, we'll try to address that, of course. But it is first and foremost a preventative visit. So
right.
If you do have a long list of problems, two things. One, give us a heads up that this is not just an annual. I also have these three things that I want you to figure out, because that gives us time to prepare. Two, probably just schedule a second visit, whether it's 4 weeks later, whatever it is. You can tell us, this is the thing that I'm going to come back for in 4 weeks, and then come back. That gives us an opportunity to prepare for just those problems in 4 weeks, or give you a little bit of something to do between now and when we see you in 4 weeks, so that we're not wasting any time.
So really, this is about time management and the fact that 15, 20 minutes is all you have, and likely for a whole year with your patient.
For some,
Should there be, you know, you hear the annual checkup, should it be biannual or semi-annual, I guess is the term, every 6 months instead?
I definitely encourage that. So I would like people to know that you don't only have to come see us when you're sick. We're perfectly fine if you schedule a visit halfway through when you're just fine. You've had your annual, we've given you all your preventative things, because the annual visit is for your preventative, for your immunizations, for checking up on your stress levels, your sleep, all of those things to make sure you are well. You can schedule a problem visit for later on and go, okay, my back hurts. It you know, when I go to the bathroom, it's just not what it used to be, and my tummy grumbles every time I eat pasta. You can schedule a visit in between for, I'm not sick, but these are the things that are going on. That's absolutely fine.
Is there a problem if your tummy grumbles when you eat pasta?
How about you schedule an appointment with me?
Oh, hey, we'll now. All right, I'll get my list ready. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's General and Family Medicine Today with Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care, and we will be back. America drinks and goes home. That's Woody Herman and the orchestra doing an old Zappa tune. 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care joins us today, 800-348-2551 or voxpop at wamc.org. So you got your medical degree in Ireland. In general, and you've seen, I'm sure, plenty of patients walk through the doors as you were getting your degree. Are patients more prepared in Europe than they are here in the U.S. of A.? I mean, you seem like you have a pretty stringent list here of things that people should have ready.
I think it's a very different practice of medicine in, I'll say Europe. I mean, I practice in Ireland and in Malta as a European country I practice in. So it's a very different kind of patient. Here we get preventative care is, there's a lot more of a focus here on preventative care. In Europe, not quite so much. There's also not really an urgent care. It might be evolving a little bit more now, but there's not really an urgent care culture either. There's your GP's office and there's the emergency department. So say, you know, young lady with a urinary tract infection, she's going to sit in the waiting room in the emergency department for a long time if she can't get into her GP that day. So slightly different profile of patient.
Are you on board with the whole urgent care model?
I am for certain things, yes. There are definitely things that if you go into the ER, you're going to wait for a really long time because the heart attack is going in well before the stub toe.
Yeah.
But then again, going back to the short amount of time and how packed your GP's office is, your family physician's office is, you may not actually be able to get into your family physician's office that day and your toe is bending 90 degrees.
I am so glad you brought up the broken toe. Now, one of my daughters over the holidays stubbed her toe pretty hard into a chair.
Yeah.
And most of us said, okay, there's not much you could do about it. wrong or right?
No, that's probably right. Yeah,
really?
Not a lot you can do.
So,
about
do
it.
People come in and say, "Hey, I stubbed my toe, doc"?
Yeah, people come in and say, "Hey, I stubbed my toe." It was sometime during the Nixon administration. Can you do something? And I say, "Nope, that stubbed toe is yours to keep now."
We're joined by Dr. O'Donnell. Oh, really? After a certain time, there's nothing you can do.
I mean, my husband's toe is at a funky angle, and that was well before we met, and it's just going to be that way. So.
Why don't you wait till he goes to sleep, see if you can fix it?
I'm trying to stay
Grab
married.
A hammer. Oh, I see. Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care is our guest today. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551. And it's Utica. Kathleen. Hello, Kathleen. You're on.
Hi, doctor. I am a, thanks for taking my call. I'm a 79-year-old woman who's obese with a BMI of 32. I'm not a diabetic, and I've tried many times to lose weight over the years of my life, going from overweight to now with this BMI in the obese range. I'm wondering, how do you feel? I mean, would you prescribe GLP-1s for somebody like me?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Kathleen, and I'll answer it in a few different parts. One, very, very well thought out question. Two, you mentioned your BMI. So I want to address the fact that the BMI scale is a very flawed scale. I use it as a marker to discuss diet and exercise, but I don't actually use a BMI scale as a proxy for someone's health. As an example, my brother is about 6'2 and nothing but muscle, and he's classified as obese on the BMI scale. So I don't want you to focus too much on the BMI, on your BMI. Second, you mentioned about losing weight. I would ask you, why do you want to lose weight, or why is that weight loss important to you? Is it for aesthetics, and that's okay if it is? Is it so that you feel better, so that you sleep better, so your joints don't hurt? Is it as a proxy for your heart health, for your lung health? What is your purpose for wanting to lose weight? Because that might direct what we should be doing about your weight loss. And then third, just I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
Third, to simply answer the question of would I prescribe GLP-1s for you, that is a nuanced question. For one, we would need to take into account what your medical background is, because there are some people that unfortunately should not take them because it can stir up certain things in their medical history. But for another, they do work very well, but you would need to do them hand in hand with dietary, exercise, lifestyle practices in order for you to get the most out of them.
Kathleen.
I primarily want to do it for the sake of my joints.
Okay.
I've had several joint surgeries. I do not want to have any more. I want to be done.
Sure.
And I know that the weight loss would be the most significant thing I could do. I've got bone on bone in my knee. I don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do. But I know inevitably it's going to become very painful.
Right.
And that really is the large reason why I want to lose even 20 pounds just to make it a little bit better on my joints.
Absolutely. And so you've brought up a very valid point. People think about weight for a lot of different reasons, but joint health is a big one as well. And so, yes, you are right that weight loss generally does help with osteoarthritis seems to be what you're describing. And, that bone on bone joint pain. Exercise, whether it results in weight loss or not, exercise on its own, physical therapy, whether guided with a therapist or home physical therapy, would be very good for your joint health. It could result in weight loss while also helping your joints. So that is one point to mention, that exercise would help anyway. Dietary, we could spend 4 hours discussing diet, but it could be that GLP-1s could help with that. The problem with trying to get GLP-1s is, you mentioned your age. I'm making some assumptions about your insurance situation. They could be very difficult to get covered by insurance for you, as you are not a diabetic.
All right, Kathleen, thanks a lot. Now, there was a time when the GLP-1s were in rather short supply and they weren't being prescribed very often. Has that shortage now gone away?
To a degree, yes. So some of the companies, without mentioning a drug name or not, but some of the companies have kind of separated out, these are our GLP-1s for diabetes, these are our GLP-1s for weight loss, to try and address that shortage.
But they're both the same, right?
They're the exact same compound. They're just named differently.
Philosophically, how do you feel about this, where someone, just gets it for losing weight, just for lack of a better term, vanity? knowing that all the stories I've heard, and of course I'm not a doctor, is that when you go off this, you gain the weight back if you haven't changed your lifestyle. Yeah. So how do you feel about the whole concept of this?
Yeah. It's just like what I had just said to Kathleen was, if you are going to go on these medications, I always advise also doing the diet and lifestyle practices, because if you have those practices in place hand in hand with taking those medications, the medications absolutely work. When you stop taking them, though, if you don't have those diet and exercise lifestyle changes in place already, the way that weight is going to come back is pretty aggressive.
We are joined today by Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care. Dr. Gray is a board-certified family medicine physician. The number here is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So whooping cough, is that a problem this season?
Yeah, pertussis, yes, unfortunately. So when you come in for your doctor's visit, your preventative care visit, one of the things that we talk about is getting your shots. And one of the shots that we'll talk to adults about is getting your Tdap, your tetanus, diphtheria, pertussis. The pertussis part of that, that's whooping cough.
Well, most of us have those when we're kids. You need to have a booster then at some point?
Yes, you do. So you get the series of them as a kid. And then after that, it's recommended to get them once every 10 years because of the tetanus part of it. Some people may get it more frequently than that. The pertussis part, women who get pregnant or people who get pregnant will get a Tdap shot or should get a Tdap shot during each pregnancy. So we recommend at least once every 10 years, but it can be given a shorter of an interval for certain situations, yes.
Are people, and thankfully, knock wood, we are now beyond the pandemic, the evil pandemic. Are people getting jittery about bird flu now?
They should. So when you say we're beyond the pandemic, I want to ask or say, I wouldn't say that it's completely in our rear view, because we are still seeing viruses on the rise. We're still seeing effects of COVID and like long COVID on the rise. We are still seeing something like we recently just got, I think it's dated the 18th of December, a message from the I think it's the New York State Health Commissioner saying that the flu is now it's so much on the rise that healthcare workers who don't have a flu shot, for example, must wear masks in certain patient care situations. So the pandemic, I wouldn't call it completely over. The dire phase of, you know, people ending up hospitalized at rates that we could not manage, handle, people dying. Yes, that part may be behind us, but COVID itself, definitely still here, definitely still a concern.
And it'll always be here.
Absolutely, yeah. It'll always be here. But going hand in hand with the flu, bird flu, what was it? The first case that hospitalized someone was also, again, recent. That was in, I believe, Louisiana.
I think down south somewhere.
Yeah. And so, yes, these viruses, whether it's because of our changing world, because of things that we are doing to our world, or just because of how our bodies are changing in response to viruses that have come before, are becoming more of a concern.
Or is it better detection? I mean, maybe these things have been going on forever and ever.
It could be a bit of both. Yeah, definitely. I do know that our bodies are changed by some of the viruses that it comes in contact with, and it definitely weakens our defenses for other things too.
You mentioned long COVID. Are you seeing cases in your practice?
We are seeing cases of just, I'll call it the bucket of weird after COVID. There are just a lot of things that people didn't necessarily have or complain of before that they're complaining of now. And we may not have an answer to every single one of them. Are some of them falling into the bucket of what we're calling long COVID? Yes.
Are they empirically verifiable, or has the pandemic changed people's mental state so that they're more attuned to every little thing that goes wrong?
There might be a lot of that too, yes. The pandemic and how it affected all of us, including, you know, just patients, doctors, how we think about things, definitely changed a lot. Definitely changed a lot of how we, something that was funny to me or interesting. During the pandemic, patients would come in to me. I had a string of patients over a few weeks span while everyone was locked down that would come in to the clinic because they noticed a lump in their chest. And so I would see them and they would show me this lump in their chest. Well, what this lump was is a bone that everybody has.
Ah.
But because people were home and examining themselves more, they were noticing it more. It was their xiphoid process. Everyone has one. They just noticed it more.
Oh, that's hilarious. Dr. Ima Loie Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care joins us today. If you have a question, feel free, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. Well, why don't we go to Matamoros, Pennsylvania? Jim, you're on.
Which tonight I kind of start to.
What?
It's about the limit of my Irish. Are more people going into family practice now, or is it still a big shortage?
Hi, Jim. So there is definitely still a shortage. There's definitely a shortage of physicians, whether MDs or DOs, NPs and PAs. We definitely have a primary care shortage. We are seeing people living longer, and as we keep people healthier and people live longer, we are more and more in need of providers to provide preventive services and primary care. So yes, we definitely have a shortage. We have a shortage in rural areas because it's a lot more glamorous, interesting to practice in more urban areas or in bigger cities. So yes, we definitely do have that shortage. And primary care, as important as it is not always thought of as the most glamorous. It's not the best paid practice. So it's a little harder to attract.
It's the first line of defense. Is that entire thinking process upside down?
Completely. Because when you look at the payment schedule or the remuneration for different specialties, the bottom three generally tends to be pediatrics, psychiatry, and primary care, which I would think are very, very important.
Yeah.
Kind of the foundation. So yes, it's harder to attract residents and medical students into those three specialties.
Dr. Ima Gray joins us today. 800-348-2551 is our number. Let's go now to Amherst, Massachusetts, and it's Joan's turn. Hello, Joan, you're on.
Okay, hi. I was interested to hear you talk about preventative appointments, which I guess is maybe another way of describing what we used to think of as annual physical. I have a question about what happened to me. I'm 70 years old, and when I first started getting Medicare, I decided to change doctors. So I was at a new practice, and I get now what they call wellness visits. Mm-hmm. I don't really get a physical. Mm-hmm. I get a wellness visit, mm-hmm. which is a lot briefer. I don't know, be too graphic or anything, but they don't ask me to take my clothes off. So the doctor really just asks me a series of questions, and that's the annual physical. And I don't know if that's a Medicare thing, if that's a thing with my new doctor, but it really kind of disturbs me because it feels like at a time when the doctor should be getting to know more about me, they seem to be getting to know less. So I'm just curious what you have to say about that.
So you hit the nail right on the head. It's not your new doctor. It's the Medicare. So there's the Medicare annual wellness visit, which does not actually include a physical proportion. So it is a visit that is about questions. We go through your chart. We get to know you. We get to know what your home is like, what your social is like, what your physical capabilities are like. We get to know all of your preventative care, your immunizations. We go through your entire history. It's our get to know you visit. It's almost social, but there's actually not a physical component to that. What I generally do for my patients whose insurance allows it is I will do an annual wellness and then I will do a physical. I'll have them come back for a physical as well, so that we can do both of those things. Because you're right, we should still be doing an actual exam on you, but it is purely the annual wellness. Now, if you do bring up an issue during your annual wellness visit that requires us to examine you, we can absolutely do an exam. So most of my annual wellness visits, I do end up doing an exam on my patients, usually targeted to whatever issue it was that they brought up. Or if their insurance allows me to do a physical at the same time, I will do a physical at the same time. But yes, the annual wellness visit is different, completely different from your annual physical.
Joan.
Okay. So I sort of have to ask the doctor's office if I can, or ask the doctor about getting more of a physical.
Yes, and they should be able to, with their billers or coders, they should be able to figure out with your insurance, will your insurance allow you to actually have a physical? Now, that doesn't mean that you can't go into your doctor for just another problem visit. It doesn't have to be your actual physical. They can have a chronic care visit with you where they go over, say you've got these three medical conditions. You can have a visit to say, I would like to discuss my blood pressure, my diabetes, my cholesterol. And usually that will include an examination.
Joan, thanks a lot. But at a wellness visit, you will take blood pressure and some of the basic vitals, right?
Basic vitals, yes. Yeah, basic vitals will be taken.
You know, here's another hack then. We talked about the doctor's visit hacks. Yes. If you're on Medicare, when you go for your wellness visit, say, my goiter is bugging me or something, and then you get a physical.
You'll get a bill for that as well.
Ah,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were on the other side of the pond. you know, is American medical insurance completely whacked?
Yes. In a word. So one of my little points that I had here was to reassure the patients, you and I are both just trying to survive health insurance. We are both just trying to survive health insurance here. So, yes, unfortunately, it is. The fact that the first question that has to be asked before I can send a medication for someone has to be, well, is your insurance going to cover this?
Yeah.
This is a conversation between your doctor and you. What does someone else who has never met you, doesn't know your health, your background, you know, doesn't know any of all that, why is there that discussion that's being had?
You know, I've had primary care docs on this program who do everything themselves. Mm-hmm. You're in part of a big, great organization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you do it by yourself, how do you handle the paperwork and all the business aspects of it? It's got to be tough.
It's tough and it's crippling. It's a part of why a lot of providers, there are some providers that are moving into what they call a direct payer model or something like that, where essentially they don't take insurance anymore, which unfortunately excludes patients who don't have the finances to actually just pay out of pocket for a membership to some of these practices. But it's the way some people are going. Some providers are going because they're just so frustrated.
Something has to give at some point, right? Mm. When's that going to happen?
Oh, gosh.
Can you put that on your hack list? Let's take a break. Dr. Ima Gray joins us. St. Peter's Primary Care. It is Family Medicine Today, general physical medicine for you. 800-348-2551 or voxpop at wamc.org. The great Thad Jones and Birdsong here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. That's our number. It is Primary Care Today with Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care. Vox Pop at WAMC.org if you want to email us. You told me in the break, and you didn't seem all that miffed, but I can tell that we only got through about 90% of your list of doctor's visit tax. We only got through 10%?
Yeah.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Well, I can't make it a two-hour show, so... Give me the Cliff's Notes version.
All right. One of the questions that I get quite frequently is, well, doc, if I have you, why are you sending me to such and such specialist? What do I need XYZ, you know, other IST for when I have you? And the way I try to explain it is primary care physicians, we're like a team coach, right? We oversee the entire team, your health, your body. We set your goals for staying healthy, identify areas that need attention. We keep track of your overall performance, ensure all parts are working together smoothly. That's us as primary care. The specialists, on the other hand, they're like position-specific trainers. So they're experts in a particular area, such as your offense, your defense, your goalkeeping. So when your team coach identifies, hey, there's this issue, and yes, as much as I can work on this, all of this general, I now need for you to go see this specialist in this one thing that is out of my hands. That is why we would send you to the IST. It's not because, you know, we're in cahoots and we're you know, in bed with, you know, so-and-so. It's not that. It's eventually, after the 90% of things that we can do to cover your health, after we've done all of that, there are some things. I can't replace your joint. I can inject it, but I can't replace it.
Right.
So that would be why we send you over to the ISTs. And there are times when we might want you to see them just once, just twice, and then after that, you may not have to see them again. It doesn't mean that we're trying to send you over and, you know, forever and ever you're going to be seeing them for such and such. They might just need to fix this one thing, and then you come back over to us.
Yeah.
Another one of them is how we use our time, something that I don't think patients know, and it might be better or it might be less frustrating for them to understand how
your time.
Our time, okay. as physicians. So we get a message saying, hey, you know, Jim wanted you to call him back. He wanted to discuss something with you, so he asked for a call back. What that looks like to us is from when we get into the office at, say, 7:20 to when we leave at 5 o'clock, we actually are scheduled with patients pretty much every second of that.
Yeah.
We have, you know, 20, 40 minutes for our lunch during which we're still going over results, coming up with a plan, looking up something for a patient, and then going back out seeing patients. So we don't actually have, you know, a slot during our 7:20 to 5 o'clock or whenever it is. We don't actually have a slot that is, okay, time to call this person back. So if you're calling the office and you're looking for, hey, I need to have a conversation with my doctor, a lot of times it's either A, our nurses can answer that question for you, or B, if it is going to be a 10-minute call, I want to actually dedicate that time to answer your question, you should probably ask, can I just get an appointment with Dr. Gray?
I mean, wouldn't that be a bill? Lawyers have billable hours. And if you call for a minute, it's an hour. Yeah. But, I mean, wouldn't that be a billable thing? If you call somebody back with a 10-minute consult on the phone,
right,
then that is another question. And the other thing I wanted to ask you before you get back to the remaining 75% of your list, you know, during the pandemic, telehealth mm-hmm. suddenly became a thing. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was doctors, or maybe the insurance looked askance at such things. Mm-hmm. And then when everybody was a shut-in,
sure,
it became a thing. Is this still in operation at your practice?
Yes. So in our practice, when it's appropriate, we absolutely do encourage televisits. And they're appropriate for certain things. You know, if I've started you on a medication for, say, your mental health or something like that, in certain patients, it is appropriate 2-3 weeks later for me to have a call to check in with you. And it shouldn't be just a flying, like, you know, quick 5-minute, hey, how are you doing? I want to dedicate that time to have your chart in front of me, look through it and update as I'm going along and all of that. So, yeah. Yes, televisits for certain things are absolutely appropriate and are still a thing. There is a push to start to get rid of them and inch them away
again,
but primary care, we're fighting back.
But doctors are like it in general.
You're gonna get doctors in both camps. I think doctors who are, I'm not saying I'm the youngest, I'm 35 years old for full disclosure, but
really?
You know, doctors in the maybe we just recently graduated from residency camp seem to like it a bit more, and doctors who maybe are not as crazy about tech, you know, people who are used to touch and feel my patient and I'm going to be with my patient for a lot longer, aren't as crazy about it.
The number here is 800-348-2551. We'll get right back to the phones with Dr. Ima Gray, but I feel so terrible about excluding so much on your list. Let's do your number one on your list right now, and then we'll go back to the phones.
Okay. This, I hope I don't alienate half our listeners, but this is maybe a little more techie of a hack. So a lot of people might have some concern or complaint that they want to discuss with their doctor. And part of the issue is, like I said, 15-minute visit. When they start to explain it, it may take them about 20 minutes to actually explain this issue. I recently learned of this one. So any of your AI dictation whatevers, you know, ChatGPT is one that I play around with quite often. If you hit dictate and tell ChatGPT what all of your issue is, talk to it for 20 minutes, dictate as long as you want, and ask it, can you summarize this for me? I'm going to talk to my doctor about it. It will actually give you like a 5-line, 10-line, whatever it is, summary that is very succinct. And it'll have suggestions on the bottom of you should probably tell your doctor how long is it the left or right side and what else you've tried. It shortens and gives you that little, this is what I need my doctor to know.
So interesting. But I mean, you know, we've heard before that, okay, sometimes there are hallucinations with AI. And as a matter of fact, we're doing an AI show tomorrow with Jim Hendler for RPI, and we're going to ask AI to predict next year.
Wow.
So based on trends from this year. So
wow.
Very interesting. But yeah. AI has its flaws.
It does.
You know, does that cause confusion at times for you?
It can. I mean, this would be just using it to kind of summarize what you've just spoken to it for. But AI definitely, it has its flaws, but it has its benefits too. More and more doctors are finding ways to use it to make their daily lives easier for documentation, for example. We have scribes where we used to have a physical person come in and type a note for you. Then we had remote scribes where you're talking to a device and someone in, you know, North Carolina is doing your notes. Now we have AI where you talk and an AI actually puts your
Amazing.
Note together. So, yeah, it can be confusing, but it definitely has ways to make our lives easier.
It's a brave new world. Dr. Ima Gray joins us today, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Christopher, you're up. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, you're on.
All right. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
So I work with my hands a lot. And I constantly find I'm like hurting them, like scraping my nails or cutting them, you know, and usually they heal pretty well, slowly, as a snail would grow a nail. But some of my fingers just don't totally get all the way out and get like dirty and like fungal, but there's no fungus. It's just dirt.
I see.
It won't go away.
Hmm.
I see.
So they grow and they crack back and then resend that whole situation.
Okay. So you're asking.
Does that make sense?
Sort of. So you're asking about what can be done about that, or how to prevent, how to fix, or what is it?
Well, I mean, so I could cut my nails back and it's almost gone. And then like a month or two later, my nail will crack and the exact same spot will be like what it used to look like a year ago.
Oh, boy.
So, Christopher, a couple of things might be happening. One, your nails actually can reflect other health issues that are going on with you. So whether superficial, like a dermatology issue, like, you know, extreme dryness or exposure to your environment, or they can reflect certain metabolic things like, you know, if you had vitamin deficiencies or iron deficiencies, some of those things can actually show up in your nails. So you mentioned repeat exposure. So it might be something you're exposing your nails to over and over, which is why it keeps happening. Or you may want to talk to your primary care physician about, is there something metabolic going on that's showing up in your nails?
Christopher, thanks a lot for the call. And of course, have more gelatin, right? Doesn't that help?
Gelatin?
Doesn't it help for your nails?
I guess there's a lot of, gelatin or like broth supposed to be good for keratin and...
What I know about medicine would fit in a thimble. So just bypass that completely. Let's go to Delmar and Adam.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I recently had a foot x-ray and it showed that I have a low bone density. And I do have a family history of osteoporosis. So I wanted to ask my primary care doctor if I can have a DEXA scan. So I wanted to ask if you think a DEXA scan is safe as far as like being exposed to radiation and how frequently should you have it?
Yeah. So DEXA scans, they do make up part of our preventative services that we recommend to people, usually for the most part for women. But for men, there are certain situations, certain medications or medical conditions or things that might happen to you that would make us recommend a bone density test or bone density scan. Typically, we'd be doing them once about every 2 or 3 years. And with regards to, you mentioned a family history and that you recently were told that you had a low bone density. So I think it would be a good idea, but, you know, definitely talk to your primary care physician about that. And if indeed you did turn out to have osteoporosis or osteopenia, there are medications, but there is also lifestyle. So diet to increase your calcium and vitamin D, physical activity exercises for weight bearing, exercise to strengthen to improve your bone density, or medications. And there's a wide range of those as well.
Adam, thanks a lot. Now, will exercise actually reverse that and increase your bone density?
Part of the reason why we recommend exercise is what we're trying to prevent is pathological fractures. So part of the reason why we recommend physical activity, I shouldn't just say exercise, physical therapy, I'm sorry, is for gait training. So to prevent falls, to teach you how to get up, stand up, walk around, how to sit, and all of that to prevent you actually having falls, to strengthen your joints and the muscles around so that you actually don't have, if you were to fall, so that you wouldn't actually end up with fractures, because the aim of the game is just preventing fractures.
When you do your, not the wellness visit, but a full physical, if people have a yearly physical, mm-hmm. are you setting mental acuity benchmarks, or is that part of what you do? In other words, those who may develop dementia down the road, you have a benchmark. Oh, 3 years ago, you were much better.
We're doing cognitive screening, yes, and we do keep records of, you know, when I did your physical last year, you scored, you know, a 29 out of 30, and this year you're at 23. That's going to raise some flags. So, we are doing screenings and keeping track of what that looks like. That being said, you're allowed to, you know, fail a math question now and then and have that affect your score.
Thank God for that. Dr. Ima Gray joins us today, and let's go to Kinderhook, New York. Christy, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Listen, I have to preface this by saying I'm a social worker with about 40 years of experience, but when I turned 65 and went into my primary care doctor's office, all of a sudden he really stopped, even when I asked for a physical, stopped touching me, stopped taking time to listen to what I had to say. And I don't know if primary care doctors are really aware these days of how important that is for people, especially as they get older. Yeah. And I just want your take on the psychological effects of being spread through this system so quickly and confined in a 15-minute, visit. Mm-hmm. And then you're out the door like you've got a number on your mm-hmm. back. And the social deficits that creates for people is tremendous. And that could be contributing to the decline of them mentally and physically. Yeah. I just want your take on that, because I'm disgusted with the whole medical community now. I just I can't believe how little they seem to care about me anymore. Yeah. Just because I hit a magic number, it all changed like overnight.
Yeah, that's, I completely hear you. And it's definitely, it's a frustration on for us too. You're not wrong in how frustrating it is to feel like you are, you know, just being pushed out the door. Having 15 minutes is, it doesn't really seem like enough time for anyone to really get into the meat of, you know, what's going on with you. Unfortunately, a lot of that is how our healthcare and wellness system has changed and how insurance companies have changed what they, you know, how they treat healthcare and how they treat patients and, you know, what's being deemed as important. So you are not wrong, absolutely. And you are right, where it's frustrating to, I had a patient say, you know, no one has touched me in 5 years, you know, not family, not friends. And that is painful. And it does definitely have an effect on people's mental health. That frustration that you feel is felt by your primary care physician as well. Whether it seems like he's rushing just for his own sake or not, I guarantee it's a frustration for them too.
All right, Christy, thanks a lot for that one. We'll go to South Hadley, and it's Joanna's turn. Joanna, you're on with Dr. Ima Gray.
Hi, thanks. This is a wonderful show. About 5 years ago, I went to my physician, and I explained the fact that I felt my metabolism was slowing down. I was not hungry in the morning and that kind of thing. And I asked to have A1C test done. And she said, oh, no, you're fit and you exercise. You don't need it. Well, I really insisted again. And when the A1C came back, it was into the pre-diabetic range. So I guess my question to you is, you know, is there enough screening being done of people who might look normal, but, you know, are falling into the pre-diabetic range? Is there any more ability for insurers to cover that A1C test?
Yeah.
Thanks.
So if you're getting a screening for, you know, diabetes or prediabetes, there are a number of ways that we can do that. One of them being the A1C, as you mentioned, and one of them being our spot glucoses. So if you have a spot glucose that's over a certain range and that, having that more than once, that would be reason for us to believe that you are diabetic or to go further into testing to actually diagnose you as diabetic. An A1C above a certain number, again, could put you in the prediabetic or into the frank diabetic range as well. Now, whether your provider chooses to do an A1C or whether, you know, between you and your provider, you choose to do an A1C versus just doing a glucose test could come down to a number of things. One of them, unfortunately, I keep saying insurance, but it is a frustration because one of them being what insurance would cover. Now, understanding what your A1C is versus your glucose testing as just a spot test could be perfectly normal while having a completely abnormal A1C, because your A1C gives you a 3-month average of what your glucose is doing roughly, whereas your glucose, you know, on any given day could be perfectly normal. So an A1C can be a little more sensitive. So maybe you were right in asking, can I have an A1C instead of just a spot glucose? But a spot glucose may, you know, on multiple different occasions may have been helpful too. In summary to your question, should more people be having A1Cs? It can be very helpful, yes. Not every single person needs an A1C in order to be diagnosed or in order to have that screening for being diabetic. Glucoses can do the same thing, too.
Okay, Joanna, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, but if you forget to fast before you go in and you get a finger stick and they check your blood sugar, maybe you had a candy bar an hour before.
Right.
That completely skews it, right? The A1C, that won't happen.
Yeah. So I was listening to a previous episode where you had asked about the A1C and the answer that you had gotten, I don't know if it fully explained to you what an A1C was.
I'm sure the question was terrible if I asked it.
Well, I was actually hoping that I might be able to explain very briefly about a little more on what an A1C was. So when you prick your finger, you're getting your glucose right now today.
Right.
An A1C... glucose, while it's floating around your body, think of it as it plants a flag every time it comes in contact with your hemoglobin. So every time your hemoglobin floats around, it plants glucose plants a flag on it. When you take your blood, check it, and actually get an A1C, what that A1C is doing is counting the flags on the hemoglobin. This is all, you know, an analogy, but it's counting those flags. Your hemoglobin, that lives for about 90 or so days. So when you get a hemoglobin and you count those flags, you're counting the flags and you're saying, on average, I've counted these up and this is how much glucose has come in contact with this guy over the past 90 days. That's how we get this 90-day average.
Now I understand. Number one, you listened to a past show, and I'm sorry about that. Number two, you answered the question. Dr. Ima Gray, let's go to Albany. Greg, you're on very quickly, sir.
Happy New Year, Joe. Doctor, you have a heart of a teacher. That was an excellent explanation.
Really nice.
Thank you very
much. I have an EMG scheduled for my knee in a month, and I'm nervous because I had EMGs in my hands 20 years ago, and it was a terrible experience.
Yeah.
No joke. The physician who scheduled it, I kiddingly said, "Doctor, can you prescribe Xanax for me?" And he immediately prescribed it for me. Will that help me get through this electromagnetic test?
They are not fun. I do hear you. A lot of my patients have told me they're not fun. It may be that you need some procedural sedation, so something like Xanax might help.
Why are they not fun?
They can be painful. They can be uncomfortable. You're getting poked and shocked.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're not
well,
the most.
I can step in, Dr. Joe, it feels like someone sticking a metal utensil into a toaster.
Wow.
It's an electromagnetic shock. It's how.
All right, I'll tell Joe.
I can't imagine the knee, doctor.
Yeah, you're right. They're not fun. I would say maybe talk to either the provider that's doing it or your PCP about maybe giving you something so you can take the day of, the morning of the procedure to help you feel a bit better. Also, maybe if your provider were to talk you through exactly what's happening, how it's happening, understanding what is going on might help you to feel better through the procedure as well.
Hey, Greg, we got to leave it there, buddy, but thanks for the call. All right, Dr. Ima Gray, how do we find out more about what you do and where you do it, and people want to make an appointment, how do they do that?
So I will be, I'm with St. Peter's now, and I'm working out of their Boston Spa primary care office. So it's at the corner of Route 50 and Route 67.
Yep.
I'm easy to find on the St. Peter's website. I believe I am the only Ima Lohi Gray with an A in the world.
I believe that.
So I'm very easy to find online. So if you just Googled my name, you'd find me on the St. Peter's website.
Of course, if you can figure out how to spell it. I mean,
A-I-M-A-L-O-H-I, Gray with an A.
You were fantastic. The only problem with St. Peter's is some of the PR flacks are very difficult, right? Am I right? No? Okay. Hey, thanks again. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Support comes from Upstate Dermatology, now an office in Saratoga Springs, providing dermatologic services, including medical, surgical, and cosmetic, 6 locations in the Capital Region and serving Western Massachusetts. UpstateDerm.com. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ima Gray of St. Peter's Primary Care for being here today. Thanks for listening. Great calls, whether they were over the phone or they were email. It was wonderful. Thanks to the wonderful Zach Malloy, our engineer over in Master Control. Equally wonderful, sometimes a bit gruff. Bob Rathbun screened the calls. Well done, sir. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, as I mentioned, it's artificial intelligence with RPI's Jim Hendler. Tomorrow, we're going to ask AI to predict what's going to happen next year. I believe this could be disastrous. Join us tomorrow at 2:00.